Turner and Ariane, thanks so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure. We appreciate you having us.
Absolutely. So let's get into it. Tell us a little bit about yourselves and, you know, how you came to establish this firm.
I'll provide a little bit of background. So what really had a profound impact on my life was reading Michael Pollan's book, The Omnivore's Dilemma, when I was in college. And it was just such a pivotal time in my life, and it in many ways completely altered the trajectory of just how I think about food and the food industry as a whole. And it gave me a lot of insight and just taught me that the food choices I make are an extension of my values. And so I think at a relatively young age, I had established that. And even though I didn't go professionally into food right at the time, it just made me think a lot about the choices I make on a daily basis when it comes to food. And eventually, when we set out to launch and start VMB, it was with that general sentiment in mind that we wanted to build and create something that was an extension and an expression of our shared worldview. When we first met, we commiserated a lot over food, despite having what people typically perceive as completely contradictory dietary preferences. Ariane is vegan, some combination of vegan or vegetarian, and has been for going on 20 years now. And the terrible joke that we make is that I've been not vegan my whole life. But we commiserated over the quality of food and how much we cared about how it was sourced and grown and raised and cultivated. And that was really sort of the impetus in the beginning for the journey of VMB, and Ariane can tell you a little bit about her personal relationship and story with food. But when we started the business, it wasn't so much because we wanted to start a food company. We just felt like something like this needed to exist.
Yeah, and I would just add that like Turner said, I have been vegan or vegetarian now, but I was practicing a form of Buddhism, and so I gave up meat and at 19. And so when I met Turner, I had never cooked meat, and I, you know, we started dating, we moved in, and I wanted to cook. And the two diets just made it really hard as a vegan. And he was at the time, fairly strict. I said paleo,
probably pretty dogmatic.
It was for better really or worse. Tough for both of us to make enough food for the whole week. And so we're spending our entire Sundays like at a grocery store, cooking, cleaning, and then trying to separate these two meals so that he's getting his, you know, and then I'm getting mine. And yeah, so I think that was a big part of it for me, especially.
Neither of us are chefs. The vegetables or whatever it is that you cooked at the beginning of the week just doesn't taste as good. And cooking started to feel just like a chore instead of something that we genuinely enjoyed. And that was, like, in a playful way, what inspired the name Vegetable and Butcher, like vegan meets non-vegan. But as the company has grown and we've got a larger team and a new manufacturing facility, we've come to realize that, that was sort of the superficial story behind the name, but it's not about us at all, especially not anymore. It's become something much greater and exciting that we've just been honored to be a part of.
Well, you've certainly laid out the pain involved with your experience and the inspiration. Let's get into the solution. What did you all decide to build, and how is it helping to solve for that pain you experienced?
Yeah, so it's interesting, right? Like, food is everywhere. It's on our screens, it's in our homes, it's at our fingertips, and technology has made it just incredibly easy to, you know, summon dinner with the tap of a button, to automate grocery lists, to have a month's worth of calories delivered to you in a cardboard box. And so in a lot of ways, technology's made food more abundant and accessible, convenient and cheap than ever before. But there's this interesting paradox because poor diet is like the number one risk factor driving death and disease in our country. And so what feels like progress in a lot of ways like doesn't necessarily manifest in the health of our country as a whole. And so when we think about our solution, it's about leveraging those same technologies, but to make it remarkably simple and easy to eat well. And it's this concept that we talk about a lot internally about putting your nutrition on autopilot. And so our goal for our customers is to make it eat like easier for them to eat well and live better with zero effort. And so we've got a culinary team. We work with dietitians and nutritionists who review the menus and recipes. And it's to just eliminate what for us became incredibly overwhelming is just the time and effort to execute all of this on your own. But with all the information out there, I mean, one year eggs are good for you, the next year egg yolks are not, and it just becomes overwhelming as a consumer. And so we've tried to be incredibly thoughtful about the business we're building to eliminate all of those pain points and decision points along the way, and to do it in a really focused and local model. So rather than ship food across the country, we hand deliver up to 3 times a week. So everything's scratch made, handcrafted, hand packed, hand delivered to our customers within the region. And our view and general hypothesis is that in the long run, it's this type of model that delivers the level of freshness and quality that truly differentiates and creates an experience for customers that can't be replicated in the national format, where you're being shipped a cardboard box of meals for the entire week. Because we're delivering fresh and locally, we have access to ingredients that a lot of those national companies are just precluded from using. So you'll find blueberries and strawberries and lots of leafy greens in the meals that we provide. And so
I would add, we're able to accommodate allergies, and I think the other big part of it is that our customer experience, when you get these boxes, it's, and something is missing, the only thing they can offer is a refund or a credit, whereas we can get another delivery to you within the next 2 to 3 hours. And you're talking to a real person, unlike, when you're ordering from one of the apps, then it's usually like talk to, it's just a quick chat bot and you have two options. Would you like to get a refund or a credit? And I think that's kind of the big part for us.
Yeah. And so while we think like, while we leverage technology, we don't consider ourselves a tech company. I mean, we're a food company first. We're focused on food and hospitality and experience for our customers. We just happen to leverage technology to help us build something that is truly scalable.
So you kind of already hit on it, right? But what's out there, right? You have these boxes that will deliver for the week and are essentially meal kits, and you get the ingredients and you're told what to do and you can throw it together in and usually, one or two pans, right? That's one model. And then the other model is probably even less attractive. It's just kind of, get the packaged plastic containers, right, with the cover on it, and it says throw it in the microwave. Both obviously have their challenges and issues. So experience-wise, if I am one of your consumers, I'm going online, am I picking my meals? And then literally someone's coming to my house. Are they all fully prepped? Do I need to do any work? What does it look like in terms of creating that really seamless experience?
Yeah, so I mean, you have two options. You can go with our default menu, or you can customize and you can select your meals. The meals are delivered to your doorstep, hand delivered to your doorstep in our reusable bags, and then we pick those up in subsequent deliveries. Unless you want to keep them, you're more than welcome to. But they're fully prepared. You can pop them in the microwave for 1.5 to 2 minutes, or put them in the oven. I love taking it and putting on, cooking it on a stovetop for another like 3 minutes, just because there's something about heat. One, I feel like I'm making it myself, and it's a little bit of a cheat. So I still feel like I'm cooking. But yeah, so everything is just ready to go. There's no, within 5 minutes, you're ready to eat. And we do, we have three courses, breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
In terms of that experience element, so you're getting all these fresh foods. I imagine for this higher end experience, this much more service oriented, hospitality oriented, as you've mentioned, there's a price that comes with it. So where do you see yourselves in terms of pricing compared to, other meal box services out there?
Certainly, this is something we talk a lot about and think a lot about internally. I mean, our general viewpoint is we try to think about it just from the perspective of what's the value that we're delivering to our customers and what are the comparable options out there. So certainly you can do all the grocery shopping, cooking, and cleaning yourself. And if you're really diligent, you can do it at a lower price point. It would be next to impossible for yourself accomplish the level of variety that we provide in a given week, and unless you're a chef, probably quite difficult to execute some of the recipes. So when you're accounting for like the time and effort that that takes, we like to think that the value far exceeds, especially for the active, busy professional, whether an individual or a family. I mean, time is the most important resource that they have, that we all have. Along with our health. And so if you can accomplish both of those things, it's certainly a lot cheaper than Uber Eats or the DoorDashes of the world, where yes, you have the ability to make a decision that evening and have meals at your doorstep, but you're paying fairly substantial fees as a result of that. And so, as long as you're thoughtful about planning ahead, which is what our platform is intended to do, is allow you to put your nutrition on autopilot, set it and forget it, or log in, as Ariane mentioned, and pick and choose your meals each week. You can do it at about half the cost of those platforms. We're a little bit more expensive than the national, most of the national companies, but I think that's the premium nature and the quality and freshness that we're providing. But be very comparable to going to a fast casual restaurant and picking up a healthy meal there. You're just eliminating all the time and effort associated with it.
Obviously, the national players, right? The reason why they have distribution centers is so that they can scale up, right? And they could sell nationally and they got to freeze things so they don't get to use as fresh ingredients, but it's so they can have that scale. When you think about your business, one, what region are you in right now? And as you think about, scaling that, what are the limitations with the model you have in place? And what do you think some of the benefits are of that as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the benefits are the aspects that we've already talked about: handcrafted, hand-delivered, fresh and quality product. We currently operate in the Washington, D.C. area. So we just moved into a brand new commercial kitchen outside of Washington, D.C. And we can serve any market with this local regional approach, any market within a 6-hour drive. So we've spent nearly a decade operating in and out of shared kitchens, really focused on refining and perfecting the model, both from a product perspective, a customer experience perspective, but I think more importantly for this category, a distribution and logistics perspective. We own every aspect of our supply chain. So from ingredient sourcing to food prep and production through to delivery and distribution to the end customer. And that's probably a harder way to go about things, but it gives us complete control and oversight over the customer experience. Then from a business perspective, you're not paying intermediaries at every step in that process. So that's where I think we're able to deliver a product at an exceptional value. And so long term, the vision is multiple commercial kitchens. We call it our regional manufacturing and distribution facility. Multiple facilities just like this, strategically located throughout the country, but all operating under this same local regional distribution model.
I love that. One of the other, again, challenges. And again, the reason I'm digging in here is because I think a lot of people have been scared off of food delivery companies, right? I've heard only negative things like, oh, that model didn't work. But now I think we're actually seeing this second frontier of organizations kind of coming up that are a little more local focused and have the model thought through a little more thoughtfully than the first time around. But one of the key challenges for those kind of early entrants into this space was also customer acquisition costs and the fact that a lot of people did churn. So when you look at your churn numbers and how long people are utilizing your service and the cost to acquire them, if you give us some metrics around that would be really helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. So we obviously have thought a lot about this too. And I think you alluded to some of the aspects that those early businesses in this category really struggled with. Not only did it just not align with our ethos and philosophy generally, but shipping food across the country, that we could never wrap our heads around the unit economics of making that work. And when some of those early companies went public, it became clear that they were acquiring customers at a cost that was dilutive to the brand overall. And there are a number of reasons for that. Of course, margins get compressed under that format, and customers are less sticky. And so you're losing on both sides of that equation. And I think given our focus on food and experience and hospitality, that the result is just a completely different dynamic and customer relationship. And so our LTV to CAC over lifetime, or the customer lifetime value to acquisition cost, is north of 10 to 1 for us historically. And so for any e-commerce direct to consumer business, those are exceptionally strong metrics. And I think it's managing both sides of the equation. It's the local and regional approach unlocks greater margin and allows us to deliver a product and experience that customers truly value and that they can stick with for the long haul.
When you think about this fundraise and where the dollars are going to go, where is the focus? How do you think about growing this business?
We just moved in this new space about 6 months ago. Prior to that, we were operating from shared kitchens in and around the DC area, kind of gradually outgrowing one after another. And at each time, we were hitting just this critical point where we had to stop growing or we had to pull back a little bit. And this new facility for us, it eliminates all of those constraints. And it gives us the equipment and the space and the team to start investing in products our customers have been begging us to introduce for years and years. I mean, we get the request for kids' meals, for family style portions. And so expanding new product formats is very high on that list. We think about entrees and sides. We call them permissible indulgences, like desserts. Kids' meals, like all these new product formats are on the roadmap for us, and then investing in some of our own technology. And in fact, we've already started to do that. We're building some technology that we know, just based on feedback from our customers, is going to be like completely change the digital experience that our customers have. So it'll give them much more flexibility and control over their delivery schedules, over their product selection. And so those are the big two customer facing ones, and then of course in our team.
In terms of, sales that you have today, kind of what do revenues look like? And now that you have this facility, what does the saturated DC area look like with the facility you now have in place? How far can you get?
Yeah, so when talking about revenue numbers, it's probably helpful to provide a little bit of context. So prior to moving to this facility, for about 18 months, we had just shut off advertising and marketing spend. We didn't have the capacity to continue to grow, and we reached a point where just the organic growth we were seeing from customers was enough to offset churn. Our expense structure at the time was a little difficult because we were running the business from multiple locations while we were still building this new facility. But it wasn't until August of last year that we started to reinvest in growth. We've grown our weekly subscription revenue by from August through the end of March by over 90% annualized. So there's been a lot of growth over the past 6, 9 months since moving into this new facility, and the expectation is that we continue to push that. Run rate today is between 9 and 10 million a year. And our expectation is we can continue to grow that at a decent clip of north of 50% a year. The DC market, the broader DMV area, so Washington, Baltimore, Washington metro alone, we view as a $40, $50 million market. And again, this new facility allows us to expand to any market within a 6 to 8 hour drive and still maintain the same distribution model that we have today. So we're so focused on our home market for now. We know there's a lot of opportunity there, but we know we have customers who have moved away from the DMV area to cities nearby, and we try to keep them updated, and we'll continue to do so.
And then, because it's so important to what you all do, because it's all about the quality, the food, and the ingredients, I'd love to understand a little bit more about kind of your sourcing strategy and how you source local. Are you going directly to farms to source these ingredients? What does that look like?
We do have a handful of relationships that are with direct local and regional farmers. I mean, we're in the Northeast US, so we can't source everything that we need year round here. So we do work with primarily with a local distributor. Then we have a number of relationships that are direct with farms. We have a couple of partners that are really mission aligned. So there's a company called Simply. Ariane and I have become quite close with the founders of that company. They supply us with olive oil, quinoa,
Quinoa, yeah.
legumes. They do direct trade. One of their founders is Peruvian, and so a lot of their ingredients in quinoa come from Peru. So we really try to focus on building relationships like that. And then over time, as we continue to grow, the ideal is many more direct to farm relationships.
Just want to give you the last word for those, investors who are on the line, they're thinking about it, but they're not there just yet. What would you say? What do you want them to know?
Yeah, I mean, for anyone local, the pitch we always do is like, we'll pay for food from any other company in the category that you want, and then deliver food from us if you want to give it a try. And if you don't notice and see and experience a difference in quality, then maybe it's not the right fit. But we would hope that it becomes quite clear that we're doing something that's different and unique and special. Outside of that, I mean, we'd love to chat. So reach out to us on our campaign page, or ping us directly.